Hey, gang. Hello and welcome. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Tuesday, and today I have a guest. He is Tom Kaczynski. I had him on a couple of weeks ago. He was the town manager of Jackman, Maine. I was just talking to him before the show. Tom, are you there? We will get him in. We will bring him into this conversation. I know my engineer is working on it. Mr. T, are you working on it? It's a little hard for Mr. T because he doesn't have any thumbs, but he will get, we will hook up with Tom momentarily. And we have a lot to talk about. If you were on the show a couple of weeks ago, you know that Tom was the town manager of Jackman, Maine, and he was dismissed from his job because on his Facebook account he had made statements where he basically said white people are okay, and that's, you just can't do that nowadays. So that's the situation. Mr. T, are you making any progress there? Bringing Tom into the show. Let's see if we can get him in. So we have a lot to talk about. There's also stuff going on in the Senate. And they have a debate, an open-ended debate on... it's an open-ended debate on immigration policy, on our immigration law. What should it be? So that's going on in the Senate right now. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. What else do we have? We had Dr. Duke had a debate last night. Tom, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. All right. So thank you, Mr. T. Thank you for your service. So before we get into these other issues, how have you been the past couple of weeks?
I've been busy working up here in New England, meeting a bunch of excellent activists and people who just want to realize a better future, and starting to work on some ideas and some concepts will come up in the next few weeks, but really asking how you build a community of intent, and we'll be talking about that more within New Albion, but... enjoying a little bit of time off. It's the first time I've had off from, you know, being a working man for many, many years now, and just figuring out the next steps forward while I meet some excellent people.
Well, good. So next step forwards. Now, I take it your next steps forward are going to entail advocacy for the forgotten people of this land.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been so impressed by the number of people who've written me and sent me stories about, you know, the discrimination and threats they face for just asserting their basic rights as Americans, as white people. And I think the time is coming where we need to stand up much more vigorously for ourselves. And I'm happy to continue working that process and just letting people know that, you know, there are people out there like them who want to continue this speaking forward. And to hopefully, in the coming months and years, develop opportunities where alternatives exist, where people can go ahead and advocate for their people without having their economic reality put at risk.
Yeah, you know, people talk about the big lie, right? If they'll often ascribe it to Adolf Hitler, although I think Hitler was not recommending it as his own policy or the policy of his people, but was basically ascribing it to his enemies, describing what he saw his enemies doing. But the big lie, meaning if you tell a big enough lie that people just believe it. And there's a flip side to that, I call the big reality. And, you know, the big reality is that white people are really, really discriminated against in so many facets of society. Dr. Duke and I on his show today were talking about the disappearing white male, or just white non-Jewish white from Harvard University. And if you're talking about straight white males, it's very much an endangered species. You look at, you know, it's not just at Harvard, it's all throughout academia, it's all throughout employment. You know, look at government jobs, such as the post office, or even such as the military, that are these government jobs are increasingly used for social engineering. Crime against whites is just kind of accepted and even joked about. I saw Isaiah Thomas, the former basketball player, not the current basketball player by the same name, but the former basketball player, joking on ESPN that you know, black people, if a white person comes to a black neighborhood, they're not going to get attacked for their race. Now, they might get attacked for their money, and everybody laughs, but it's not because of their race. I think the reality has gotten to the point where people just can't believe it, because the reality is so divorced from the narrative. The narrative being the big lie, and, you know, we're living the big reality. The big lie that there's white privilege, the big reality is that there's massive white discrimination.
Well, you know, one of the things that they always do really well is they attribute to you what they're actually doing, right? So if you look at it from that perspective, the big lie that they're telling is that we are the ones with the advantages, like you say, but it is something where increasingly you're seeing that removed. And I think it's been that way for a long time. I think that when you look at it and you look at diversity and where populations are being imported and exported, it's pretty impossible to it's pretty impossible to conclude anything other than that, you know, white countries are being deliberately browned. And, you know, why that should be is one of those questions. Who is it that wants to see white populations reduced? Who is it that wants to see, you know, us not have the ability to exist within our own native lands? I mean, leave aside America for just a moment and consider the European examples, where these were lands that were occupied by different thousands of years in many cases, and now their own governments are actively trying to replace those populations. And, you know, I know economic arguments are made about this, but I think the story is a little more complicated than that. And, you know, I know a lot of your listeners are very aware of the different things at play. But what I would note is it seems like, you know, the ability of nations to stand up as unique, distinct cultural identities is constantly being reduced. And no more so than in the white world, whether it be Europe, America, South Africa, or any of the other, you know, colonial states that emerged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you know, I was formerly in academia. And still, in recent years, I've helped students with their applications to colleges. And, you know, sometimes I am shown these essay questions. I've seen essay questions from a bunch of different colleges. And a very typical essay question is, how would you bring diversity to our community? So, Tom, if you were asked, how would you bring diversity?
I wouldn't get into Swarthmore again with the answer I'd give you today. I guarantee you that. But let me answer the question, and let me answer it honestly, and let's see what you think. I would argue that the best diversity comes from allowing people of groups to exist within their groups and explore different pathways forward. And so if you ask me how I'd realize diversity, I think diversity comes from if you have people of a certain cultural background or even as part of an ethnic background who choose to live together, then they develop unique traditions, heritage, culture, and practice of life. And so I would argue, you know, at that point, separation is something that's really beneficial. If you bring people from all different cultures and force them to conform to one culture, then you're destroying the diversity of ideas and human experience. But if you accept the idea that different people belong in different spaces, not without any anger or animus towards each other, but just in seeking out their own destinies, then you actually have much greater diversity, because you'll have different ideals in different areas, and the world becomes a more interesting place where you can visit people who are different while recognizing you have a home where you belong.
Would that answer get you into Swarthmore today?
No, it would get me on the SPLC watch list, which I'm proud to be on these days. So, but I think it's a true point. I mean, diversity it's for diversity to have any actual meaning, there needs to be differences. And if there's one thing we've seen with the big lie agenda, it's that we're all supposed to be the same, you know, and, you know, to lift other people up, we're being brought down. And I think that's very true. And you can see a lot of economic and other indicators that kind of prove that out.
Mm-hmm. You know, I studied political science and international relations and foreign affairs. And, of course, Africa is a continent that has – where democracy, as we think of it, has never taken root. There are some countries that have elections from time to time, always mired in violence, where the losing side does – like Kenya recently. The losing side doesn't recognize the validity of the election. But it was long said by defenders of Africa that the reason you couldn't have democracy in Africa was because the colonial powers had just drawn a bunch of lines on the map that had no relationship to the boundaries of the various ethnic groups. And in a multi-ethnic society, people would simply vote their ethnic interest and not the national interest, and that's why democracy couldn't take root. This was a very, very, very mainstream explanation. And if you look at the history of Africa, actually, it bears out. You know, when you look at the Kenyan election, you see tribalism. When you look at South African elections, you see this kind of tribalism where sure. You know, wherever it takes place. And now when you look at the United States, don't you see this kind of tribalism? I mean, the Democrats are forging themselves into the coalition of the ascendant, you know, the non-whites, and the Republicans are more and more becoming the white party. Does that sound right?
I think it's what we observe, right? I mean, the problem in democracy is that it's really susceptible to corruption. And when people, it's like Jefferson said, when people realize that they can vote themselves the money they want, then democracy starts to fail. And, you know, you look at how I think a lot of minority groups approach government from a very pragmatic perspective of, I would even call it an ethno-redistributionist state, where literally they take money from the majority to the minority and they continue siphoning it off. And they are very happy with that arrangement, and they can have that understanding in a way that white people don't, because we tend to talk about things very abstractly. But I think that absent either a strong authority of force, you know, some sort of a authoritarian regime, or a strong cultural authority that works to subvert these values, if you have a multi-ethnic state, that it's pretty inevitable. And I think history bears this out across different cultures, not just in Africa, but Europe as well, Latin America, that you end up with people voting based on sort of tribalism. And I think, you know, in America, the shame of things is that, you know, people look at the decay in our political process and money and different things and that, and that's all certainly true. But I would argue that antecedent to that was the fact that you destroyed the common culture, you know, where people were all sort of assimilating to some extent. And of course, there were always problems with that, but at least there was the assertion that there was a common culture and there was a common goal and a common purpose, you know, and that was, you know, life rooted in the family, the church for most people, and, you know, civic engagement. And as all those fell by the wayside, the only center of authority left was the state. And it's basically become a sort of kleptocracy where different groups are kind of jockeying to get what they can from the government. And, you know, the Democratic Party especially has motivated people very well on that principle, not just race, but, you know, identity politics, you know, your LGBTQ type people and all that. So, yeah, I just don't see it as holding together. I think the thing that's difficult, though, and the real challenge for the Republicans, and that we're going to see play out in the next 10 years, let's call it, is the Republican Party is manifestly uncomfortable being the party of white people, yet it's the only way they can win elections. And we've seen for many years that they would rather lose than, you know, take the stance of just defending their people as the people who vote for them. And Trump changed that to some extent, but, you know, there's going to be some pushback, and it'll be really interesting to look at the 18 midterms and other things going forward to see if people do recognize and the Republican Party evolves from a party of you know, just fiscally conservative ideas, but also to embracing a little more social spending, perhaps, on helping people. And if you want to look at it that way, you could argue that the way Trump set up the tax reform with the Republican Party works that way. Because realistically, like how they don't allow states to draw unlimited exemptions anymore, they're basically punishing the blue states and the very liberal areas that have heavy amounts of minorities and, you know, other groups who vote Democratic. So at the benefit of people who live in a place like, say, Maine, which, you know, theoretically is going to benefit a lot more in this new tax scheme. So, of course, then the question is, how well can you hold a country together when you literally have groups against one another? And that's a bigger problem, which is why I'm involved a lot more in culture than politics these days. I don't know how well it holds together, because I think both sides have sort of tacitly accepted now we're on a road where it's one against the other. And even though polite commentators like to pretend that isn't the case, anyone looking at the voting and the demographics can't help but draw that conclusion, I think, if they're honest about what's happening.
And we are in an era of national disintegration around the world. Maybe national is not the best term for it, state disintegration. We've seen the Soviet Union break up. We saw Yugoslavia break up. We saw Czechoslovakia break up.
Sure. Ethiopia. Well, it's ethnic localization, right? Let's call it that, because what we see are different groups of people with cultural identities drawing apart. And, you know, I think it's a reasonable thesis to say in America, you know, if you've traveled some, I know you have and I have as well, there are distinctive cultures in different areas and that those will start to draw closer to one another. I mean, we've already seen the white flight phenomenon kind of make red states redder and blue states bluer. And even in, within a state, it's pretty easy to predict certain communities. You know, the cities are where you find the liberals and the minorities, and in the country belong to the white folk. And you're going to see that happen more and more between regions and whatnot as people vote with their feet. And now that you're seeing actually Democrats in response to Trump get more involved with local and state politics and putting laws in there, I think that will even accelerate it further, because for the longest time they controlled the federal government and the Republicans were successful at the states. But as these things get more sorted out, I think you're going to see that hyper-regionalization, and it's why I think it's so important that people really think where they want to be and be in a place that kind of reflects the values they want to live. And we still have a lot of mobility now, but the truth is the future, you know, if it goes well, might look something like Brazil, and if it goes poorly, it might look something like Serbia, you know. And I don't really love either of those options, but, you know, I think families who are realistic about things need to at least consider those possibilities.
Yeah, indeed. What's happening in the United States over the past few decades, I think, you're getting a change in mindset among different people, but especially among, say, the traditional conservative or right-wing person who once upon a time would have been the most nationalistic, the most, you know, most likely to join the military, most likely to be my country right or wrong. I think in the 80s, there was a rise of anti-federal governmentism among them, but they were still for the American state. I think we're going to be going to the break in just a minute, so I'll finish that thought after we come back from the break.
There's an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back. So before the break, I was just saying that I think there's been a shift going on among, say, what you might call right-wing or patriotic people over the past four decades or so. I think initially, you know, if you go back four or five decades, the people who would have thought of themselves as being conservative or right-wing or patriotic, they would have been for the Vietnam War. They would have been for kind of America, right or wrong. And then in the 1980s, you started seeing, you know, the rise of this anti-federal government sentiment that Reagan either fueled or tapped into. And so that, but these people, it wasn't as if they weren't pro-American. It's just they wanted to go back to a more of a states' rights era that is embedded in the Constitution. But it kind of moved on since then. So suspicion of the federal government is now kind of morphing into giving up on the American state. And it's, I think it's a lot of these same people who now talk about Balkanization or secession of the South. And this has been going on over a long period of time. But these things don't necessarily have to go on over a long period of time. I was in Yugoslavia in 1984, and everybody seemed to think that it was wonderful that Yugoslavia had two alphabets and three religions and six languages and seven whatever else's. And I was in the Soviet Union before it broke up, before Gorbachev took over, and then when Gorbachev was in power. And you know, nobody was talking about the Soviet Union breaking up. That happened pretty fast. Both of these happened pretty fast, and both of them, you know, the Soviet Union, it broke up with the agreement of the Russian establishment, the Russian leadership. In fact, it was practically a declaration of independence by Boris Yeltsin that broke up the president of the Russian Federation, that broke up the Soviet Union. Things can happen fast, but But in the United States, you've had this steady progression. And so, you know, the question for Republicans, for instance, is if they don't become the party of the white people, if there is no party for the white people, are patriotic white people going to abandon America, the idea of America? What do you think of that?
Well, I think they'll functionally be forced to that example because the Republican Party, based on limited government and conservatism, isn't going to win elections. It's not going to win the right states. And every time the Republicans lose an election at this point, you have to figure how many more people will be introduced through immigration policies designed to favor the sort of, voters who will eventually become Democrats. And I think we've seen that process happen again and again, where if you reach the point where you have a permanently disenfranchised 40% of the population who basically can't control federal policy, the choices will either be submit or resist. And while I think the majority of people probably will submit, I think you'll see a large and growing contingent take the resistance approach. And, you know, using the example you were providing the Soviet Union and some of these other entities, the parallel I can't help but draw is as you centralize power and put more hands, more control in the hands of the state, what you ended up with was the expectation the state would handle more of the responsibilities of the people. And when the state failed to handle the dependency it had created, that's when that rapid-fire balkanization became possible, like happened in the Soviet Union or Yugoslavia or other cases. And you look at the rise and growth of the federal government in the United States, and, you know, you couple that with the active patriotic movement, you know, the people who were resistant in the 80s and the 90s. I think you could look at the Paul campaigns, educating people about the Fed and the role of finance. You could look at the Tea Party as a stand toward, you know, originalism in the Constitution. And so this whole trend has been pushing people more and more away from faith in the government, that there's still this reflexive Americana patriotism. But I'll tell you what I take as a hint that it's really just a sham at this point. It's the amount of people I know who lean right wing, who now figure they should, if they can make money off the government, they should, because everyone else is doing it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of a leading indicator that there's a lack of faith and a lack of trust. And once you stop having a high trust society, democracy is just a waiting period for someone to go ahead and take a more permanent form of control. And I don't know what that looks like, but I feel like, you know, Trump is like the last blast of what America used to be. And whatever follows him, whether it leans right or left, is going to be much more into this new reality, where politics is going to become much more of a zero-sum game. And given the sort of cultural actors out there, I don't see anyone within the media, within academia, or anything who are going to work to put people back together, because the people who run those institutions like to play all of us against one another. And I guess that's the frustrating part. I have a lot of my friends who are aware of a lot of these issues say, why do you play into these fights? Because you know nobody's going to benefit, except the people orchestrating them. But ultimately, we have no choice but to look out for our own, because in a lot of ways, the progressives won. They've won the culture war. Now we need to become a reactionary movement and respond to them. And that's kind of how I look at it. But I know other people have different views.
Well, let's talk about that after we come back from the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio, with Patrick Slattery and Tom Kaczynski, the until recently town manager of Jackman, Maine. We're talking about people's I don't want to use the word loyalty, but their dedication to the idea of the United States of America as the Republic that was founded in 1776 or 1789, whichever starting point you want to use, and how potentially, how quickly things could fall apart. We were talking about the Soviet Union, and during the break, I was mentioning that in August of 1991, there was going to be a signing ceremony of a new Union treaty that would have transformed the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics to the Union of Soviet Sovereign Republics. It would have given the various republics basically sovereignty over their own affairs, and the Union government would simply, it would have a military, it would conduct foreign affairs, and not much else. And day before the signing ceremony, there was an attempted coup. President Gorbachev was in his dacha in the Crimean Peninsula, and it got surrounded, and its phone lines were cut off, and they tried to force Gorbachev to either not do this treaty or to resign, and he did neither. And after that, Gorbachev effectively lost power to Russian President Yeltsin, who effectively declared independence from the Soviet Union, and that was that. Things fell apart really, really fast. How fast could they fall apart here? What scenario could you envision?
Well, I think that, a financial crash is one possibility, right? If people can't get food. I mean, imagine something like the 1929 crash. You know, people now don't know how to farm. They don't know how to live off the land. There would be panic, and as people lose all their assets, I think, you know, the government would be unequal to handle the challenges that emerge. Any sort of natural disaster, an extended power outage. I mean, imagine we got into a war even. Let's just pretend for a second we get into a war with North Korea for whatever reason, and China decides to be a hostile entity and decides, rather than fighting American forces directly, they go ahead and shut the power off for 3 weeks. I mean, what would happen in America? You know, the food wouldn't get into the cities, and you could imagine a lot of things happen really quickly in an emergency sense. But even in a non-emergency sense, you know, if the, let's say Trump gets reelected a couple times, or Trump gets reelected and you have, you know, the right goes and acts a certain way, maybe California tries to secede. I mean, there's a lot of money behind that out there. Mm-hmm. And this presumption that secession will only go from the right, I think, is sort of short-sighted given all the resources on the left and how they look at things. So it's a, you know, America worked when you had states having a high degree of autonomy to pursue their own paths that fit their own economies and cultures. And we've reduced the ability of states to do that over the last 100 years so terribly through both financial requirements and sort of this idea of centralization of culture that any side getting elected is going to be an oppression of 40% of the population. And when you get to the point where people perceive the issues that way, where, you know, it's no longer Democrats and Republicans fighting over policy of how much to spend on this appropriation or this social thing, but where they literally are favoring different groups of people and different approaches of what government should do, it becomes really difficult to effectively govern. And that's why I tend to think, you know, it could happen much sooner than people think. Mm-hmm. You know, unless we have some cultural great awakening or we have some sort of a police state emerge. And I think, you know, I don't tend to believe the cultural awakening would, but I could imagine having maybe a military junta of our own at some point that succeeds as it's the last trusted institution in our land. But even that would have, you know, limited authority and power, because over time, I think you would come back to the same problem, which is that the cultural expectations of the different parts of America and the different peoples within America are entirely divergent and at odds with one another.
Okay, I want to ask you one more question before going to our caller. Hardly anybody predicted the breakup of the Soviet Union. The one person that I'm aware of who did predict it was a French political scientist named Hélène Carrière-Doncasse. But even she predicted it would be the Muslims who would want to secede. And actually, it was all six of the Muslim majority republics wanted to sign that treaty with Gorbachev. So it didn't come from that direction. And in America, people are assuming, oh, it's the white nationalists who would want to balkanize, break up. But you raised the example of California. And there is talk of secession in California. I don't know if it's serious, but it doesn't have to be serious at first. It's talk. And if California, if events developed and California actually declared independence, because, you know, already their attorney general is saying that their immigration policy trumps the American, the federal immigration laws, and he'll prosecute people who abide by federal laws. That, you know, so it's already that reached that situation. How would run-of-the-mill Republicans respond to the idea of California declaring independence and taking away with it 54 sure thing votes for the Democrats, electoral votes for the Democrats?
Well, it's a good question about how that would happen. I think that the Republicans, I mean, the bigger problems for the Democrats, right? Because they would then lose a lot of control and ability of, you know, basically 20% of the electorate they need to get into the presidency. But, you know, it's hard to say. The details would matter a lot. I imagine there'd be a number of people who say let them go. And understand that if California ever were to leave, it would not leave as presently configured. There'd be huge swaths of that state in the eastern part of that state and the north of it that would want to stay. And I expect you'd see some sort of a split along those terms where really the coast is what would leave. But the question would be is, would the federal government have the willpower to go ahead and try to stop it from happening and impose martial law, which is what it would take. I mean, you'd have, you know, sort of in reverse, a situation where Trump would be playing the role of Lincoln going down to Fort Sumter. And if it was done peaceably, I don't think it would happen. But I would imagine that if I was a California separatist trying to radically act to make this happen, I would force a situation where people would have to fight in the hopes that others would join us, maybe hoping for, you know, people in New York or that. And then you could end up in a much wider civil war rather than a sort of organized breakup. And that's what's so dangerous of this. I mean, in some ways, the safest way to do this is, you know, the government would have to radically decentralize power to the states to preserve the union. And then beyond that, you know, understand that if that didn't work, then they really might need to consider some sort of peaceful, you know, disintegration, sort of akin to what you see happening in some places in Europe. Maybe how Scotland has its own home rule parliament is one example. But it would be really hard to predict. And I think that's one of the reasons it hasn't happened. But I think that if you get a long enough run where one party's in power, which, given the demographics, is going to happen one way or the other, you're going to see that sort of response with very unpredictable outcomes that will trend probably towards violence.
Okay, wow. Well, let's go to our caller, Mark, in Louisiana. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Just for historical accuracy, correction, please. Yugoslavia just didn't disintegrate like by an act of God or anything like that. Now, I don't know if that's what you meant, but if it is, it's totally wrong.
What I said was that it happened relatively quickly. I referenced my travels in Yugoslavia in 1984, where Yugoslavia, compared to its neighbors, even Greece, it seemed orderly and reasonable, and people were at least spewing the government line, and it wasn't as harsh a dictatorship as the other communist states. They were saying, oh, isn't it wonderful? We've got two alphabets and three religions and six languages and whatnot. And then, you know, 8 years later, it starts devolving into this civil war.
Well, that's what I mean. I seem to get the message from you that it happened kind of by serendipity.
If you're going to raise the issues of, there are issues that go beyond that.
It's one issue. It's one. The people responsible for it was world Jewry. It's an ongoing process. You know, those Jews are not done with Yugoslavia. The goal was to break it up completely into very small pieces, and to effectively take control of all of them. And that's what they're doing. And the one that is still resisting is Serbia. But they have managed to make a lot of inroads even there. I think Serbia is going to collapse. And when I mean collapse, it's going to be totally under control of Jews, like the rest of Yugoslavia. That was the goal, and that's what they got. So who was responsible? The Jews, 100%. If I were to say 99.99999%, I would be wrong.
Okay. Mark, 100%. Can I ask you, do you have a background in Yugoslavia or Eastern Europe? Or
Studying and traveling in that region. Hungary, you know, Austria. You know, in Yugoslavia, and just doing a lot of studying, especially when things started to deteriorate back in 1991, at the beginning of 1991. But even prior to that, you had Jews like Lantos. You may remember Representative
Tom Lantos from California,
He was going back. He was going to Yugoslavia, Serbia, to Kosovo in the late 80s. To instigate the Albanians, mostly Muslims, you know, to rebel. And you have to consider that 90% of the Muslims over there, the Albanians, you know, came in illegally when Yugoslavia was invaded by Germany and Italy for the most part. And Tito continued to accept them in great numbers at the same time that the Serbs from Kosovo were forbidden. They were forbidden to go back to, you know, to their homeland. So it's very involved. It's very, very, very involved. Nothing, you know, from the myth that we hear all the time.
I have a question for you, because you seem to have a background. Do you remember, I think it was in 1992, a gentleman from California, but of Serbian background. He was an American citizen by the name of Milan Panic. And he was appointed prime minister of Yugoslavia.
With shield for the Jews, you know, that total traitor, like most of them have been.
And you know, at the time he was an American citizen, but he was president of Yugoslavia. And if you were to think that he was somebody who was over there as a American or Zionist establishment puppet, why would they allow Yugoslavia to be broken up into these little ethno states at a time when there was this American Milan Panic as prime minister and potentially president?
He never really occupied a position of power. The man in power was Slobodan Milosevic. He's the one who was
the president of Serbia.
The president of Serbia.
This person was the prime minister of Yugoslavia.
Serbia was the one that the one province or republic that was being attacked by world Jewry.
Here's another question for you, and also for Tom, if he wants to address it. But I'll ask you first. So, you're citing, and I'm not enough of an expert on the breakup of Yugoslavia to talk about the Jewish role in it, but in the Soviet Union, both the establishment and the breakup of the Soviet Union seemed to have a very big Jewish role in it, and Jews came out benefiting at least short term from both the establishment and the breakup of the Soviet Union, while the Gentiles suffered greatly. In the United States, do you think there is do you think a breakup of the United States would be something that the Jewish establishment would push for, or something that they would resist, seeing as the United States, as it's currently formulated, is doing very well for them? Thank you very much.
Well, my opinion is that whatever at the given time serves the best interest of the Jews and that they want to control the area, you know, it may be better for them to break it up, but at the same time, it may be better for them to keep it together. It all depends on what the situation is. But the goal is total control and domination over the world, of course, including the United States. So if they think it's in their best interest to keep it together, that's what they'll do. If they think it's in their best interest to break it apart, that's what they'll do. But if the Jews are behind it, their goal is total domination. That's what they're interested in. That's what they're interested in. So if they're behind it, you better be careful. You better distrust it. You better not go along with it, even if you think it's in your best interest, unless you're a Jew yourself.
You know, I think if you look at what's happening out there in terms of what's happening for global trends, the internationalization of institutions, you know, run by the financial cartels, and you look at the role America has played in that historically, being the reserve currency, being the center of how financial operations happen, if America goes ahead and takes a more sovereigntist approach, where we go ahead and look out for the interests of our own people and that we assert our constitutional rights and represent a group that's not playing along with the global consensus, then I think we will be set up for a fall, because I think our Constitution, from this perspective, is seen as a historical inconvenience and something to be eradicated. And it's something that I think rightly concerns people, that, you know, all the different global actors, Jews included, who want to sort of realize a single group of global governance are going to have to at some point destroy the idea that a citizen has sovereignty.
Can you hold that thought until we get back from the break?
Yes.
Thanks.
Of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and the Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap, but did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
And welcome back to the show. These last few minutes of National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Tom Kaczynski. And Tom, you were talking about the potential breakup of the United States. Would you like to finish your thoughts, expand on it?
Yeah, what I was saying was that I think what we will see is that if the United States starts acting in a way that's threatening to the existing world order that you see, you know, sort of the population displacement agenda, and you see the Chinese starting to come on board with some of that, then we may very well be set up for a fall, and that you'll see money spent to agitate different groups against the majority and to manage a civil war in a way where, you know, American assets can no longer be deployed internationally. And, you know, when America disappears in that chaos, there will be the potential for other actors to make great profit and, move along the agenda of organizing things internationally, with America being an example case of why it's necessary. So I think it's a legitimate fear. It's something fear that I worry about.
But nothing's inevitable, right?
Well, no, I think the problem, though, is, as we learned in my own life, I mean, as long as you play along with the fiddle, you're allowed to do whatever you want. I mean, the nice thing about America is you're allowed whatever degeneracy and vice you want and whatever, you know, expression you want, as long as you don't threaten real political or cultural change. Those are the people who are castigated. And so it's sort of an ironic thing, but as we seek to reclaim virtue, only then will we be seen as a threat and then be subject to attacks from others, you know, who have different agendas.
And what I was trying to say is it hasn't happened yet. It's not inevitable. And depending on how people like us and our movement, how we act, are we the masters of our destiny?
Well, you know, I think the sad truth is that the more effective we are, the more likely this conflict becomes. But it's a conflict worth having, because they wouldn't worry about us if we weren't a threat. And I think people can take heart that so many resources are expended to prevent, you know, a movement of white nationalists.
And finally,
rising.
Last question, does the conflict have to be violent?
I hope not.
Okay. I hope not as well. Well, thank you so much. I hope you'll come on again, Tom. You've been a great guest, and I think you're a great voice for our people, and I'm looking forward to big things from you. We have great expectations for Tom Kaczynski.
Thank you, Patrick.
And we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.